I was born in a small town in the Ukraine. The name of the town?
Mm-hmm.
Kasilov. I don't know.
That's exactly. In what year?
Well, in 1896.
Okay.
We were five children, four sisters and a brother. My father left for London. It must have been around 1903, I suppose.
Oh, so you were quite young, wasn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Were you the youngest child?
No, I was not the youngest. The youngest was a boy. My mother had five children. And then my father, because that what makes the Jewish people travel, they couldn't make a living in this little town where they live. He was a tailor. And he immigrated to London because the fare was less expensive. When they reached London, it was easier to get to America. Their purpose was America.
Did he take the whole family there?
No. So we remained the five children. The youngest was about a year old. And we went to the place in the one room with my grandmother. Then my mother got sick. She was sick for about 2 years, and then she died. We remained living with my grandfather, my mother's father. And it was a very poor life. Then, in about a year, my father sent for the oldest sister. She was about 13 years old. So she went to London. And we lived for 7 years with my grandfather, all our children.
Was your grandmother still alive?
Yes, she was a step grandmother, but she was good to us. Mm-hmm. She treated us nice.
What did your grandfather do?
He was a shoemaker. And my father used to send sometime a few dollars. He made very little. And then the immigrants in London used to be robbed by the bankers. If they gave them the money, they didn't send it away. But this chapter is not known, maybe, to nobody.
No, I've never heard
that. My father told me when I came to America, he told me he used to send money, he used to send every month. But we used to receive the money only for holidays, for Easter and for the high holidays. It was a very poor life. In fact, I went to work when I was about 12 years.
So very shortly after you got to London, then?
No, I didn't go to London. I lived with the rest of the family,
in that little town. Did you have any schooling at all?
No, I didn't get any schooling except I learned Yiddish. My grandmother used to teach me how to read.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a girl that was know a little how to write, so she taught me how to write Yiddish.
Did any of your sisters or your brother get any schooling?
No. Mm-hmm. Then after about 7 years, my sister and my father were in London, and then they immigrated to America. And then they started sending for us. So they brought me first, and the other four children remained home. Naturally, when I came here, I started to work, and it was easier for all of us to accumulate enough money to bring the family over.
What work were you doing in this town in the Ukraine?
They were manufacturing, I don't know what to call it, these You wouldn't know it. Only people that come from the other side of it would know. They were making poor coats for the peasants.
Mm-hmm.
Only the peasants used to wear them because they were very warm with the poor inside. So I was working at that.
And you were 11 when you started?
I was 12 years when I started to work there. And I worked until I was working for 50 cents a day starting. Then I left after working there for 5 years. I get $1.50 or $1.50 a week.
Which so, was worth how much then?
According to the standard then, it wasn't much even then.
What sort of work did you do in the
industry?
It must have been hard to work with those heavy furs in my hands.
You get used to it.
Were there a lot of other children in the factory?
Yes, most of the poor girls are working in this. There must have been about 12, 15 girls.
Both Jewish and Gentile are primarily Jewish?
Primarily Jewish. I don't know why, but that's the way it was.
Was the owner Jewish?
Yes.
Mm. Did you work on Shabbos?
No. Nobody worked on Shabbos.
The whole factory would close down?
Yes.
But you would work on
Shabbos? No, Jewish.
Mm-hmm. Your family was
there. In fact, he was a very Orthodox Jew, the book. He was an uncle of my mother's.
Was your family Orthodox?
No, I would say that. We were not given a systematic training or bringing up. Neither my grandfather or my grandmother had the time for it, or maybe the inclination or the ability, I wouldn't say. But I didn't get any bringing up. But of course, we were taught what's right and wrong, what's good, basic.
Mm-hmm.
Basics have been moral of the people.
But they kept the kosher household and had Shabbos?
Naturally, sure. And the holidays and mm-hmm. all that.
How large was the Jewish community in this little village?
I really couldn't tell. There must have been about 200-300. And have you an idea how the small towns looked? Have you ever seen it in a movie or any place?
It's an old picture.
Yeah. It was the town where the Jews lived was like a round, all around the town were the Gentiles, where they had their little homes and their gardens. But the Jewish people lived all, there was a big market. What would you call the market?
Where
the peasants used to bring their products to sell, mm-hmm. and the stores.
Mm-hmm.
The stores were mainly held by the Jewish people. And the peasants used to bring their products. So there was a special place like a circle.
Mm-hmm.
And all around it was built up at the little town. I don't know the statistics, mm-hmm. but nobody ever wrote about it. In fact, I noticed that there are so many little towns that some people, especially after the Holocaust, mm-hmm. that the townspeople take the initiative and write about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't seen anything about our town.
You're talking about the Yeridim?
Yeah, the Yeridim. No, alle Zugflächen im Feuertes verkaufen Produkte.
Ja, the word?
No.
I just mentioned that the trading took place. Well, the peasants, mostly, the exchange of products consisted of agricultural items. And as far as mechanical is concerned, was very little of it. But the main thing they needed for the people was agricultural. And the peasants came to town bringing their products in exchange for goods or whatever the little town produced.
Mm-hmm.
They exchanged. This was in the...
It was a barter system, actually. There was middlemen, mm-hmm. there were traders.
Mm.
They used to go to the peasants and buy off mm-hmm. Products.
Oh, okay.
But for everyday use, like fresh vegetables, fresh food, so the peasant women used to bring it down and sit down in the marketplace, and the Jewish people used to buy from them. Of course, it was very cheap that time.
Now, the Ukraine was one of the particularly bad areas for Jews in terms of the pogroms. Do you remember in your childhood?
We didn't live through a pogrom, actually. But every winter, when the recruits used to have to pass by the town, I remember my grandfather used to dig a big hole in the vestibule. Like a basement, and we didn't have many valuable possessions. Maybe the possessions was samovar or whatever, very little. But they used to hide the things there, and sometimes, and you actually couldn't expect, but you knew that the recruits would pass by, they'll do mischief. So my mother used to take us to my grandfather, so that the family be together.
Now, what was the name of the... this was the soldiers?
The soldiers, the recruits. They used to draft them every year. And they used to come to town, and they let themselves go, you know, young people. So, what actually at the room, I don't remember. But there was always the fear of a pogrom.
Mm.
This I know. There was always a fear of a pogrom. Came Easter or like I told you, in the fall when the prisons. Then the pigs in some prisons. The recruits, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know whether they were registered in our town or they passed by to another town, this I don't know.
But so as a what child happened, you had
there was
fear.
Always that fear of a pogrom. Now, what else would you want to know? This is the town I come from, mm-hmm. and this is
where
my background.
Where was the closest large town? Like, where was Kiev, for instance?
Kiev,
how far away?
We were from Kiev, but never in Kiev. The largest town from the gubernia, the district, mm-hmm. or the country,
mm-hmm.
was the state. The state mm-hmm. capital was Zhytomyr.
Okay.
But it was very far and it's never there. Where we used to go is to Proskurov. Proskurov is a well-known town mm-hmm. too. First of all, it made itself very well-known because they had a big pogrom mm-hmm. there. And
how long would it take for you to get to that town?
A couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, by Ostenburg.
Mm-hmm.
It used to take about 3-4 hours.
Now, when you went to work in this factory, had your sister already been working there?
My sister, my elder sister, I had one elder sister, two smaller, and a brother. My elder sister worked too,
mm-hmm. so
before she left.
So she taught you what to do?
No, they taught me.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Mm-hmm. How large was the factory?
About 12, 15 girls were mm-hmm. working there. There was another factory. There were two. That's right. There must have been employed maybe about 50
mm-hmm.
girls working by hand. Did I give you a picture of the town?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you recall your trip then to London?
I didn't go to London.
I mean,
I came to America.
Came to the United States. Yes. Where did you go from your town?
We had to cross the border, naturally, to Austria. And from there to Rotterdam. I took the boat to Rotterdam.
Now, you were 15 then at that time.
Mm-hmm.
By that time.
Yes.
Did you come alone?
Yes.
Oh, can you tell me about that? Did you travel alone then, too, all the way to the boat?
Yes. But my father, they used to buy a ticket, the transportation from after you crossed the border, you had to do on your own. So some had to, was it going in the Greenwich? I was, there were two ways. You had to buy off the border guard, and
to get across.
Or some people could get a governor's passport.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get it because my father wasn't there. Nobody had my record.
Mm.
So a family that sent on such a passport was adopting me as their daughter. Their daughter named home.
Mm-hmm. This was a Jewish family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was easier to go through the border. Then you cross the border, there was the agent already waiting, and you were wearing a tag, like a package. until Amsterdam, I traveled to this way from one town to another. Mm-hmm. There was always an agent.
Well, the agent waiting. Meant you would each play.
Yes.
Was this agent Jewish usually?
I suppose he was, because I couldn't speak any other language but Jewish. I must have been Jewish.
Oh, so at this, and you never learned any Russian, your main language was Yiddish?
I used to speak very little, you know, without any schooling. I used to speak Ukraine and Russian a little, but I never went to school.
Now, did you stay with this family as you crossed to Rotterdam, or did you go alone?
No, I went alone. They went to a different, maybe a different boat they took.
What?
I didn't go with them.
What sort of experiences as a young girl did you have traveling alone?
Actually, there wasn't too much of no adventures. It took about 8-10 days by boat. Then I arrived in Castle Garden.
Were you frightened at all?
No, I wasn't frightened.
Can you describe the boat and the boat trip a little?
Yeah, it wasn't any different from the boat that we read by Sholem Aleichem.
Mm-hmm.
They describe the boats with the third class, how they travel, and I don't know, really. It was crowded, and a lot of women and children mainly. And the food wasn't bad.
Oh, you ate the food on the boat. You didn't carry your own food.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
Some Orthodox Jews wouldn't eat on the boat, but to me it didn't make any difference. So, there was nothing exceptional that impressed me very much on that trip. Only the fact that when I came to in Austria, what towns are there? See, I'm forgetting. Outstanding towns.
Vienna?
No, not Vienna.
Border town?
No. Border towns are small.
And the name?
Lvov. How do they call it? They call it a different name.
Trieste?
Trieste. The Austrian big cities. You should remember that.
Well, the you said on the border.
No,
Krakow?
Not on the border. Krakow. Yeah, I think that I came to Krakow. Mm. The first big town was Krakow. First big city.
Where would you stay?
So I was so impressed with that city. I remember. I didn't know that there was a streetcar, but I saw the car moving, and I didn't know what it was.
You frightened?
I rented a long snake, another girl from my town. That wasn't so bad. But whenever I came up to that agent's office, and I was amazed. And I looked down, and I see that car moving, and I was wondering, what is this? in Amsterdam.
Lemberg. I mean, Alzheimer's?
Lemberg, yeah.
Alzheimer's City.
Lemberg is called Lvov now, yeah?
Lemberg? No, it's far from the...
Lemberg is called Wolf.
No, that's right.
Not Polish.
Polish. Polish name.
Oh.
So...
It's Poland now.
And then the train used to stop in Germany. The German people impressed me. They were so all dressed up, good looking, well fed. So every time, of course, I was afraid to get off the plane. But, you know, you were always warned, especially a girl, not to make any acquaintances, not to talk to strangers and all that. I obeyed orders. But whenever the train stopped, I used to watch these people and admire them so much. They were dressed up that I'd never seen before.
What did you have with you in terms of your... Did you have any other clothing with you in terms of your belongings?
Very little. Very little. You know, all these immigrants used to have these straw suitcases.
Mm-hmm. Did the girl from the town stay with you? Did you travel together then?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, she had her father in America too.
Mm.
And I had my father in America. That was in 1911.
And you arrived in Castle Garden then? What time of the year was it?
In September.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I remember it was Labor Day. So when the boat arrived in Castle Garden, they wouldn't let us off because it was Labor Day. So we had to spend all day there. So I remember families that expected newcomers came by boat. They used to take a boat and come to the ship and meet their friends or relatives. But my father didn't come, and I was so disappointed. That was my first disappointment in America. My father didn't come. The second day when he came, he brought me home, so I realized, they told me that my sister was out on a demonstration. It was Labor Day, it was a holiday. So they used to have a big celebration. So my sister was taking part in the celebration. Mm-hmm. My father didn't know that a telegram came. It came home, it was too late. So that was my first disappointment. Then there were a lot more.
Yeah. So you stayed on the boat a day and a half before you went?
So, yeah. On the second day, after Labor Day, I was taken home by my father.
And you weren't held up? At Castle Garden?
No, I was a healthy specimen.
Well, was your family in the Ukraine, did you have any sense of, did they have any progressive or radical ideas?
No, my grandfather was a poor worker, hardly made a living. And I have never come in contact with anyone of the Bund. I'm often wondering whether there was any or not, or didn't reach me. I only know that in that factory where I worked, we once had a strike, believe it or not.
Oh, when was that?
Oh, I don't know. It must have been by 1908 or 9.
Oh, can you tell me more about that?
Some girls left and others were working. One, they tried to organize both factories, and they didn't succeed somehow. But I remember that those girls that were on strike, I wasn't, they used to come and talk. But there wasn't much. I guess they didn't know themselves how. There must have come some agitators to come and try to organize, but they didn't succeed. There wasn't any.
Well, was there much activity in your town of people who were involved in the 1905 revolution? Were there?
No.
So that really within the town there was no kind of tradition?
No, there wasn't really.
You had no sense of being wronged by working when the others went out on strike? Did you,
I can't recall whether it meant anything to me. Because I wasn't the only one, the others were working too, maybe one or two girls left. So it didn't make much impression.
So when you arrived in the United States, you didn't have, as you arrived, you had no sense of unionism or radical tradition at all?
I just had.
What kind of place were your father and sister living in then when you arrived?
When I came in, they lived in the East Side, New York.
What was the apartment like?
It was a two-room apartment.
Was the water in the hallway?
The water was, I think it was inside the water, but the toilet was outside, and the little tenements, a room with one window, the bedroom was no windows. A small apartment.
And your father was working in the needle trade then?
Yeah, he was a tailor. He was working.
And your sister?
My sister was working. My sister took me to the shop the second day when I came. I had a job already.
What was the name of the shop? Do you recall?
Oh, no. That's too much. It's too long ago. No, I wouldn't remember. But once I started to work, I met with the union people, and a lot of them, former revolutionaries, that participated in struggles in the old country, and I started to learn from the beginning.
How large was this first shop, do you recall?
It must have been about 30 people. I started at $7 a week. At that time, the women, the UK comes in, the women's place in the industry, the women were not full-fledged workers, they were helpers. And I worked for a tailor that gave me $7 a week in the beginning. And most of the girls at that time worked not for themselves, but they had to have somebody responsible for the work. Even some of them knew the work just as good as the men. And then it changed. Of course, there was no union when I came. Mm-hmm. The union was only a year old.
Oh,
it was just a year after the general
strike.
Yeah.
Well, this, I haven't come across this before. In other words, you would work in a shop, but you would be the helper for the man who was the operative.
Right.
And he would do the machine work.
No, he did end work, too.
Mm-hmm.
But it was quite a complicated, skilled work.
Mm-hmm. This was women's clothing.
Yeah.
Now, would he pay you the $7 or would the boss pay you?
No, he would pay.
Oh, I see. So the boss would pay him a certain...
Pay him, and he would pay me.
Hmm. That made it harder to organize, didn't it?
No, it was after. They were all organized. All belonged to the same union, the girls as well as the men. But they were not given the responsibility of making the old garment. At that time, you had to produce... the operator did one job, and then the finisher took over, and it was a skilled line of work. So some of the girls that work a long time, you know, you learn, but they were not given the chance to take work on their own responsibility. Some worked on percentage, like for instance 40 and 60.
With the
tailor, yeah. But I started working by week. Then as the years passed, the union improved the conditions naturally, and of course it depended on the girls too.
Now, when you came local, this is Local 25?
No, I belong to Local 9. Of the International Labor. And the club, I belong in the clockmaker.
The clockmaker,
oh, they were separated. There were two different unions. Dressmakers, clockmakers, and underwear workers.
But when you came, was a couple years after the general strike, the union was
The union was fairly young. And of course, it wasn't the first attempt to organize. It took years. And when they finally succeeded to organize, they ran out on a strike, and there were about 60,000 people participated. Mm-hmm. You must know that. You talked to many people. And they finally succeeded to get recognition. Once they got recognition, they had already established bad system.
Now, when you arrived, must have been after the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire,
oh,
wasn't
yeah.
it?
Mm-hmm. It was very still in the memory, in the minds of the people. And then, of course, if I saw the time to introduce protection, more protection of the doors, and firemen coming in and inspecting mm-hmm. the places. It made a terrible impression on the workers, mm-hmm. as well, right, in the industry, because all shops were all alike. Only, of course, not after the union was organized, there were no such restrictions, like in the triangle buildings, like the closed doors they had, and that's what brought about so many victims. But the memory was still raw, still new, when I came.
When you started, was your shop itself organized yet, or
yeah.
not? It was.
It was after the mm-hmm. strike, the general strike, organized the industry.
Mm-hmm.
So men and women couldn't any difference. And then they started introducing restriction bills, protection for women, special bills mm-hmm. for the interests of women, like the trade union, Venus Trade Union mm-hmm. League. Used to introduce mm-hmm. legislation.
Were you involved at all with the Women's Trade Union League?
No, I wasn't. I was never a delegate to mm-hmm. there, but we used to appear every court, every time. As far as organizing, in our industry, they didn't have to be active.
Mm-hmm.
It was organized already. But we used to be active in organizing women that were not organized.
Mm-hmm.
Not to a great extent, I don't think so. They were affiliated with the AFL, and I remember our locker always used to have a delegate, and she used to bring the reports of the activities of the Women's Trade Union League. I don't think they are existing now.
No, they disbanded in, I think it was the late 40s.
Yeah. Well,
very often they serve as a link between the working women and the women who are fighting for the vote. Were you aware of
that?
Oh,
yeah. I was never active in the suffragette.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't.
Do you recall your first union meeting that you went to?
Well, I was a member of the union for a number of years until I started going to the meetings. When I started going to the meetings, everyone that wanted to be active was very welcome, especially amongst the women. It was 1916.
But you joined right away in 1911?
Yes, of course,
mm-hmm.
you had to join.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1916, we had a lockout, the bosses locked out the workers. So it turned out to be a very long strike and a bitter strike. At that time, I began to understand and be active in the strike, going to take down workers and to participate mm-hmm. in the strike and so on.
Now, the lockout, before we talk about the lockout, did you, in the period before that, between 1911 and 1916, you said you started being exposed to more radical ideas?
Yeah.
Were you involved in the socialist or anarchist circles at all then?
No. No.
But you were going to meetings?
Not too often. After 1916, I wasn't a participant.
Mm. So you were just exposed to the ideas of yourself?
Yes.
And were you going?
I was exposed to so many different things. I was raw. I had to start everything, and I wanted everything. So I was not involved actively. I used to go to a meeting now and then. By the way, they used to have women branches. The women didn't meet together with the men at union meetings. So they had separate branches.
Within the same local?
Yeah.
Oh. So, like, yours was Local 9?
Yeah. The same local. The men used to meet separate, and the women used to meet separate.
Why did that begin, do you know?
I really don't know. I was told that the men didn't behave nicely or talk in a way that was insulting to women. And so they decided they left separate branches.
How large was the women's branch then?
There were branches in all the neighborhoods.
Well, no.
There must have been about 30,000 members in the law group. It was about F women,
mm-hmm.
but the women were not active.
Mm-hmm.
The men were more active.
Now, would the women's branch have its own officers too?
No. They did have representatives to the executive, but no, they didn't have their own officers.
So the officers were all men?
Mm-hmm. The officers were all men, yeah. The organizers, the officers.
Now, were you going to school at night during this time at all?
I tried. I didn't have a chance much. We used to work overtime. I started to go to school, the season started, and I had to give mm-hmm. up. So on and off, I used to go into mm-hmm. school once in a while.
What was conditions like, say, the first place that you worked at?
Conditions, 60 hours a week, except overtime. The agreement was 60 hours a week. You want to take the telephone, yes? And the wages were very small.
What, did you have lunch, time off for lunch or not?
Yeah. You said half hour? No, I think we had an hour lunch.
Oh, so you were able to, you didn't have to eat it at your bench?
No, you could go to the restaurant or you could go wherever you wanted. It was an hour lunch. But the man, you know, the union people used to tell me, you should have been here before the strike. You know, whenever it used to come to compare conditions. Of course it was. But then gradually it started to, let's see, then was the 1916 strike, reduced the hours to 50 hours.
Now how did that strike begin?
They had to renew the agreement, and the bosses refused to renew it, and they locked out the workers. So the
was it industry-wide?
Yes. So it was a long strike, I remember. And then it was settled, the hours were reduced. And then, the satisfaction in the union and the coming up of the left-wing movement was because of the bureaucracy and people used to think that the officers don't take care of their conditions and perhaps things. And the main thing was that the voice of the people should be heard. That was the main struggle.
Mm-hmm. Well, had you joined the 1919 was the split from the Socialist Party and the Communist Labor Party began. By this time, were you involved?
No. I was only involved politically in 1919 or 20, not before,
mm-hmm.
when I was drawn into a left-wing group in the union.
Oh, I see. So you came to it through the union.
Through the union, yeah.
So in 1916 was the first time you went to the union
mm-hmm.
meeting.
That's right.
Do you recall your reaction to that first introduction?
I only remember that when I took the floor and I said something, and the girls thought so much of what I said that they took me into the executive at the second term. So, of course, I was impressed. I could see that they are taking the part of the women's interests and defending, and then we started demanding the abolishment of the women branches, the ladies branch, they used to call it. If you don't mind, I have to go into the bathroom. Now, what do you want to know?
Well, you started saying then that the women demanded the...
Yeah, then... When the fight started with the against the bureaucracy, I remember they signed an agreement was signed in 1916, And the workers approved it. It was brought to the approval of the workers. But then it was discovered that they gave away some, they used to call it a supplementary agreement, that the union had an understanding with the bosses to pass by certain things that were written in the agreement. All these struggles are meant at these meetings where the workers were fighting, and then of course it started introducing reforms and abolishing the helper system. The girls were allowed to take work on their own responsibility, and I started working for myself, and I made that better. And then they abolished the branches.
Where did the